Hi everyone, thank you for joining the Fulbright webinar today. Today we're going to focus on Northern Europe. So we're going to look at opportunities in Denmark, Sweden, Iceland, Finland, the Netherlands, and Norway. And I'm delighted to be joined, so my name is Peter Rauchy, I'm with the Institute of International Education in New York, and I'm delighted to be joined by two Fulbright alumni to the region. Torin Anderson was a Fulbright Roving Scholar in 2015-2016. He presented workshops on creative writing and American studies at schools, teacher training colleges, and conferences across Norway. Torin works at the University of Arizona's Institute for Energy Solutions and as a freelance writer. Currently, he's piloting a program on the legacy of Japanese incarceration through World War II with a grant from the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. In this project, high school students are learning about Japanese incarceration and interviewing survivors of the incarceration camps. And Torin was a roving scholar to Norway. We're also joined by Dr. John Broussard. John Broussard is on the finance faculty at Rutgers School of Business, Camden. John received the Fulbright Henkin Distinguished Chair in Business and Economics grant to Finland over the fall of 2016, in the fall of 2016 semester. John's Fulbright project on dual class shares is ongoing, as well as numerous other efforts that were started during his stay in Helsinki. There are also ongoing. The collaborative connections made will generate numerous follow-up academic research efforts between John's home institution and Finland. So I'm delighted to be joined by Torin and John today to share their experiences about insight about their experiences on the Fulbright program. Let's talk about some general information about the Fulbright program that will give you some insight into the program, but also how to start crafting a strong application. The Fulbright program was established in 1946, really with the goal to build mutual connections between people of the United States and the rest of the world. This sort of ambassadorial, person-to-person diplomacy aspect is the DNA of the Fulbright program. And this is really interesting from a historical and sort of program management aspect, but it also resonates with what makes a very strong application, to this day. So we fund projects in teaching and research and across all disciplines, but we really want to have our Fulbrighters contextualize the work that they do in that ambassadorial capacity. You are an ambassador of the U.S. as a Fulbrighter, and understanding that diplomatic aspect is really key to understanding how to make a successful Fulbright application and make the most out of your experience as a Fulbrighter. The Fulbright program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it's administered in the United States by the Institute of International Education. As a Fulbrighter, you're in great company. There have been 380,000 Fulbrights awarded since the inception of the program in 1946. We send about 800 U.S. scholars abroad annually, and across the umbrella of Fulbright programs are about 160 participant countries. Our alumni include heads of state, Pulitzer Prize recipients, Nobel laureates, MacArthur Fellows, and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients. So again, you're in great company as a Fulbrighter, and many, many people have fit a Fulbright into their professional, academic, and personal trajectory to great fulfillment. So you're in great company as a Fulbrighter. Today, we're going to focus on the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. These awards support teaching, research, or a combination of teaching and research, and they're generally from anywhere from 3 to 12 months. We have programs active in the scholar program in just over 125 countries. And generally, these awards are for faculty, but they're also for administrators and practitioners outside of academia. Aggregately across the catalog, we have awards that are open to all disciplines. Not every award will feature all disciplines. Not every country will feature an award that supports all disciplines, but you'll be able to, as we dig through the catalog of awards and progress in this presentation further, I'll show you how you can find information and find awards with the right parameters for you. It's really key that you apply to a specific award with a specific project that fits into the parameters of the award, and that also resonates with your profile. So that's going to be key when you're looking for awards and when you're putting together your application, to making sure that there's a congruence, both in terms of what you want to do, but also your professional profile. Our deadline is August 1st, unless otherwise specified. There are some international administrator grants, which are two-week short-term seminars. Those can have different deadlines, but for the most part, our catalog of awards, which is about 470 awards, the deadline is August 1st. Baseline eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program include the information on this slide. Now, every award is going to have different parameters. There may be different requirements, but in general, this is the sort of baseline eligibility criteria. So you must be a U.S. citizen. If you're not a U.S. citizen, we have the Visiting Scholar Program where we bring international scholars to the United States on Fulbright grants. But the U.S. Scholar Program is to send U.S. citizens abroad. Each award will have different parameters, as I mentioned, and one of the key things to pay attention to is the degree requirement. Some awards require the PhD or other doctoral degree or other terminal degree. Others are open to folks with master's degrees and professional experience or academic experience. So you want to pay attention to those parameters. We aggregately, though, we have awards that are open to professionals, artists, practitioners outside of academia. So you want to sort of look into the parameters of the award and make sure, again, that your profile fits into what the award, how the award is written. If you're applying for an award that features teaching, there may be specific requirements around teaching experience. So that's another thing that you want to pay attention to. Then there are new policies on Fulbright Scholar Grants. So there is no longer a cap on the number of Fulbrights you can receive in your lifetime, but you must wait 2 years from the end of one grant to start an application for another grant. So let's look into what we have on offer for Northern Europe. I'm going to start with Iceland. Iceland has a variety of awards, and Iceland's actually a really good case study of the kinds of things you can find across different countries, because we have the All Disciplines Award, 9217 IC, that's the first award on the list here. That's a sort of open-ended award where you're basically designing your own project and you're really working to find a host institution in Iceland that can support your project. The All Disciplines Awards, you'll find these quite frequently throughout our catalog of awards, and these are tend to be much more open-ended. These awards allow you to really build your own project, and specifically for Iceland, this award is a 3 to 5 month grant. You can be hosted at any university in Iceland, and it's truly open to all disciplines. Some All Disciplines Awards will have particular preferred disciplines. So they'll actually state that in the award, that even though it's open to all disciplines, they prefer, these five disciplines or these specializations. So you want to pay attention to the sort of the fine print parameters around discipline types that is written into the award description. Then throughout Iceland, we see a lot of awards we see a lot of awards that have National Science Foundation in them as well. These are partner awards, meaning that NSF is partnering with the Fulbright program on these awards. And we have the Arctic Research Grant, the Cybersecurity Grant and Critical Infrastructure, the NSF Award in Computer Science and Cybersecurity at Reykjavik University. We have the Polar Law Award. That's a different kind of award that it has a particular focus. So unlike the All Disciplines Award or the sort of Cybersecurity Award, the All Disciplines Award is sort of open-ended. The Cybersecurity Award is sort of organized around a theme and will link to relevant disciplines. The Polar Law is really focused on, legal studies. The Sustainable Agriculture Award is really focused on agriculture and things that relate to agriculture. So we can see a variety of awards in a country. Some will have parameters around the kinds of disciplines that they're interested in having candidates apply from. Some will have particular institutions identified as a potential host, such as the NSF Award at Reykjavik University. The Ministry for Foreign Affairs Scholar, this is a special award where they're looking at folks, they want folks with a PhD or a terminal degree, and they're really looking at particular fields in economics, law, poli-sci, sociology, and other disciplines. So I'm going to demonstrate the catalog of awards and show you where you can start to find information like this about particular awards. But, you know, there's a wide variety of different opportunities. There are 470 awards in our catalog, and you really want to pay attention to the parameters of the award and make sure that you're finding an award that is of interest to you and that fits into your profile, but also the kind of project that you hope to undertake. Let's move on to Finland, and Finland has a number of awards. There's a wide variety of awards in Finland, and this is the sort of full list of awards. So similarly, Finland has an all disciplines award that's sort of open-ended, where you sort of design your own project. There's also an all disciplines award at the University of Turku in Finland. So that's 9170, the third one from the bottom. We can see, some variety of the kinds of awards in Finland along those lines too. We have the Hankin Distinguished Chair in Business and Economics, and Dr. Broussard can share some insight about his experience with that. We have the Nokia Distinguished Chair in Information and Communication Sciences. We have the Sas Des Moines Foundation in Health and Environmental Sciences, and the Sas Des Moines Foundation Distinguished Chair in Health Sciences. We have the Tampere University of Technology Scholar Award, and the BDT Grant in Science, Technology, and Innovation. These are awards that are, you know, either a particular potential host institution has been identified, or there are particular fields of study that are areas of focus that are very important to, you know, paying attention to when you're applying for the grant. I also want to point out a very unique award across the entire catalog, the Mid-Career Professional Development Award in Finland. This is a very unique award because it's not focused on teaching or research. It's really designed to be a professional development project. So you're not proposing a teaching project or a research project. You're really designing something that will enhance your career. They're looking for candidates that are sort of mid-career and that want to work on professional development in Finland. So that's a very special kind of award. But Finland, as you can see, there are a lot of variety of awards, and some are sort of more open-ended, like the General All Disciplines Award and the University of Turku All Disciplines Award, and others have particular areas of focus. Let's move on to Norway, and Norway has a number of awards as well. So we have the Advanced International Studies at the Nobel Institute, and that's an award that really focuses on history, U.S. history, non-U.S. history, economics and political sciences. We have these sort of open-ended all disciplines award. We have the American Literature and Culture Award, the Digital Culture Award, the Arctic Chair Award, the International Courts and Tribunal Awards. So you can see the variety of awards that are available in Norway. And so, you know, one of the awards is focused on work at the Nobel Institute. Others are sort of open-ended awards, that open-ended awards where you can, you know, find your own host institution, but they're sort of the parameters are around particular, disciplines, so digital culture, American literature, and culture. A very special award to Norway, and I'm so glad that we have Torun Andersen on this webinar, is the Roving Scholar in American Studies, which is really a very unique award in our catalog of awards, really focusing on the ability to teach at, you know, different kinds of populations than you might typically expect on a Fulbright Scholar grant. And I'll have Torun speak about his experiences as a roving scholar a little bit later. In Sweden, we have a good amount of awards as well. We have an all disciplines award that is really, again, sort of open-ended, where you have a lot of leverage to design your own project. Then we have the Distinguished Chair in Alternative Energy Technology, the Fulbright Lund University Chair in Public International Law, and the Fulbright Uppsala University Chair in American Studies. The latter two awards, they're focused on particular institutions in Sweden and also focused on particular disciplines, as opposed to the All Disciplines Awards, which tend to be much more open-ended in terms of discipline and in terms of potential host institution. I want to talk about Denmark, which has three awards. There's the All Disciplines Award, which again is sort of design your own project, much more open-ended than than some of the other kinds of awards. But then Denmark also has the ICT information and communications technology, where you're affiliating with a particular institution in Denmark to focus on a variety of projects that relate to communications technology. Similarly, the Danish Distinguished Chair Award in American Studies. Generally, when we say Distinguished Chair, or when we put Distinguished Chair into an award title, that's generally for someone that's further on in their academic career and will have parameters written into the award descriptions around what we're actually looking for. Moving on to the Netherlands, we have two awards in the Netherlands. We have the Senior Professorship in American Culture, which really focused on American culture, obviously, as the name suggests, and then the All Disciplines Award, which is more open-ended. You'll see a lot of that throughout the region. There's a focus on American culture, American studies, and that makes sense as a Fulbright program because, you know, again, the ambassadorial aspect, what is the value of having an American teach American culture or topics that relate to American culture? So that's actually really, you know, spot on with the general sense of what Fulbright is. And that, obviously, Fulbright scholar grants can accommodate, you know, all academic disciplines, but we'll see quite frequently throughout the region these awards that focus on American culture, but also trends in the region as you saw, and you know, Arctic topics that relate to the Arctic, both in terms of the natural sciences and physics, but also in the cultural aspects of the Arctic and things of that nature. And as we saw in Iceland, we had several cybersecurity awards and several partner awards with the NSF. So this is a very quick run through of, you know, what we have on offer throughout the region. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to demonstrate the catalog of awards for you. If you just bear with me just a second, I'll pull up the catalog of awards and show that to the audience. And the catalog of awards is really invaluable in finding opportunities and understanding what the parameters are. It's so key that you apply to a particular award with you know, understanding what the profile of interest is for the award and then what the parameters of the award are. So this is the general interface search for the catalog of awards. You can search by country or by discipline or by region. I'm going to just do an advanced search to show you some of the options that you have. So here I pulled an advanced search, and when you do that, you get all 470 awards in the catalog. You can search by region, so Africa, Europe, Eurasia, Middle East, etc. You can search by particular countries by typing in the country name. You can search if something offers a multi-country opportunity. You can search by discipline, and discipline is very broad strokes. So we have the discipline of arts. We have the discipline of economics, of engineering, rather. These are, you know, very, very broad headings, but when you're starting your search, you want to cast a very wide net and then narrow down. So discipline is one way to search. You can search by activity. Is it a professional project? Does the award feature teaching, research, or a combination of teaching and research? You can search by grant length. Does it offer a flex grant? And I'll explain what a flex grant is in a little bit. Or, you know, how long is the grant? You can search by degree requirement. Is a PhD required or not? Then you can search by the category. Is it a Distinguished Chair Award? Is it a seminar for international education administrators, you know, and the other categories under this search function? You can search by professional profile. Is the award open only to academics, or is it open to folks outside of academia? Then you can search by the requirement of an invitation letter. Some awards require an invitation letter. You can search awards that require one. You can search awards that specifically tell you not to search for a letter of invitation, and every sort of iteration of that in between. What I want to do is dig into the catalog of awards. Let's look at Finland. As we saw in the presentation, you know, Finland has a number of awards available. Let's look at the Haga Helia Scholar Award. So this award only supports projects that feature teaching. So if you're doing research, if you want a project that's focused on research, you really wouldn't, this is not the award for you. There are up to 2 grants on this award, meaning that under this award, up to 2 people will be funded. And the activity is that you'll be teaching undergraduate and graduate level coursework at Hagahelia University of Applied Sciences. Again, they spell out here, the grant cannot be used for research. This is a 3 to 10 month grant. There is no flex option, meaning that you must be there for from 3 to 10 contiguous months all at once. There are some parameters on when the grant can begin under grant dates, and then because this is specifically at Hagahelia University, that's the location of this award. You can be at the Helsinki campus or other campuses for this award. This award focuses specifically on the disciplines of business administration, communications, education, information science, and journalism. So they want projects in these topics. And then there's some additional information around specializations, which include business management development, entrepreneurship, hospitality, and others. Under award requirements, that's a separate tab, and you see there are 4 tabs available. Under award requirements, you get additional information. So for this, an invitation letter is required. So Hagahelia University must write a letter of invitation for you. Fear not, though, we actually give information about Hagahelia, and we also give a contact at Hagahelia, Sirpa Hess from the head of international relations. We also have information for the Fulbright Commission in Finland. Emmi Jelikainen, the program coordinator in Finland, is happy to take questions if you have particular questions about Finland or particular questions about this award. Under award benefits, we have a potential range of what you could receive on this award and some additional information about special award benefits. Under country area overview, we have information about the country and specifically how it fits into the Fulbright program. And for Finland, we have lots of helpful links around general information about Finland, information about studying and living in Finland, and other resources. So when you start to identify awards, these are the kinds of things you want to be looking for. How many grants are available? What activities does it support? What are their preferred disciplines? What is the profile that they're looking for? So for this award, a PhD is required. Language requirements. Generally throughout Northern Europe, English is enough to teach. If you're designing a research project, though, you want to have the local language commensurate to the requirements of the research in general, but that will be written into the award description. So for this award, Hagahelia, international scholar does not need Finnish or Swedish in order to be able to live and work in Finland. English is widely spoken in academic circles and in the country as a whole. So that's a great note about language requirements. Let's look at a different kind of award, though. So the Hagahelia Award is really at one institution in Finland, and it's of several preferred disciplines. Let's look at Norway and see what Norway has on offer. I want to look at the All Disciplines Award in Norway to give you a sense of what an All Disciplines Award could look like and how it contrasts to an award like the Hagahelia Award. So this award is the All Disciplines Award in Norway. There are 6 grants available, approximately 6, meaning that 6 people can be funded on this grant. And this award supports just teaching, just research, or a combination of teaching and research. This is a 3 to 9 month grant, and your grant length must be justified and clearly stated in the application. They want a detailed project plan. In general, that is the case across the board. A detailed project plan is key for making a strong application, but Norway felt it important to mention this in the award description. Here you can be hosted at any institution of higher education or research in Norway, and applications are truly sought in all disciplines. They don't specify any preferred disciplines. Under the award requirements, a letter of invitation is strongly preferred. You can apply for the application with without a letter of invitation. You can apply for the award, rather, without a letter of invitation, but because there are approximately 6 awards, you really, really want to prioritize a letter of invitation and include it as part of your application. The language requirements here, all teaching will be done in English. Proficiency in the host language may be an advantage, but it's not required. For research activity, language fluency sufficient to complete the research project is required. And that's where feasibility comes into play. If you're proposing lots of extensive research that requires knowledge of Norwegian and you don't have that, and you don't have a plan to conduct this research, you know, you're going to get dinged on feasibility. So that's something to keep in mind. Under award benefits, we talk about the potential range of benefits that you could receive and any special award benefits that are features of the award. And again, we have a under country and area overview, we have a general sense of the country and how it fits into the Fulbright program. So I'm going to open the floor to questions and answers in just a few minutes, but I want to give a chance and really take advantage of the opportunity to hear from the alumni that we have on the line with us. So I'm going to invite Dr. John Broussard to speak about his experiences on the Fulbright program. Dr. Broussard, if you're with us, we invite you to speak about your Fulbright grant.
Okay, Peter, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss my experience with the Fulbright Finland grant that I had last year. To give an indication to the participants, the picture that shows up on the slide was me making a presentation at, and you can see in the background it says American Voices 2016. Fulbright Finland requires all of their Fulbright Finland grantees to participate. I mean, you know, requires and it's a kind of a broad stroke. And you speak about an experience or an item that is uniquely American. And I was there, fortunately, with my wife and another student from Penn State University, and we were speaking at this presentation about college football. So just to give you an indication of how broad strokes the Fulbright program is, it allows you to be that ambassador that you talked about. And we had, I thought we had a fantastic day. I learned so much about other aspects of the U.S. that I knew a little bit about but didn't know as much as I learned that day. So it does provide an opportunity for us to be ambassadors, as you had indicated in the first slide. So my particular experience was essentially nothing short of a dream come true. I had been visiting Finland for approximately 20 years on and off, but the Fulbright allowed me the opportunity to live there and experience Finland in a way of a local. And that's what the Fulbright program generally does. It allows you to experience. Even as academics, we think that we know how things are, but you really don't learn everything. You don't really learn the particulars until you actually live there, and the Fulbright program actually allowed me to do that. For me, I was fortunate because I'm more of a researcher, although I've won awards in teaching. I really wanted this opportunity to be research-focused, and I was able to concentrate on research while I was at Honkin. And I can tell you that I can connect 6 brand new academic research projects to this experience. I mean, and I'm talking about brand new, meaning I did not have ideas or anything about these until the Fulbright program. I did meet, as you'd indicated, the different types of grants that you can have. I believe that there was 1 or 2 mid-career grantees on the program in Finland during the time period whenever I was there. And there were other grantees there. There were some teaching grantees recipients that were there. I mean, it was just a whole host of professional activities that I was experienced, that my experience opened me to. So that was really good. So from that aspect, I'll indicate to you that I think Fulbright, in general, is one of the best things that I can indicate about my professional career. And I can only say one thing is that I think you should just apply. As the people who are listening to this, if you just apply, take a look at what's available and apply, I'm sure there's going to be something that will, entice you to go abroad. And it's just a wonderful experience. So with that, Peter, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Hopefully I've covered what you needed me to cover. And I'll try to be around as much as I can for any particular Q&A you might have.
Thank you so much, Dr. Broussard. That was such a great insight into what you did in Finland. I want to open the floor to our other Fulbright alum, Torin Anderson, to talk about what he did as a roving scholar in Norway.
Okay, great. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much. It's really great to be here. Again, you know, very difficult to try to sum up 10 months in a couple minutes, but it was hugely impactful for me and my family. As Peter mentioned, so Norway is the only country that has this roving scholar program. And basically what they're looking for is, you know, it could be professors, experienced educators, curriculum developers, people who are really interested in working with students, basically traveling around the world, traveling around Norway and teaching. So I was based out of Oslo, and I worked mostly with lower secondary schools, so the students were mostly 14, 16. But then I'd also do workshops with, like, asylum seekers, with teachers at conferences. And I just had, like, a little menu that I would send to schools. Like, here's some workshops I can do for students related to American studies topics. And here's some workshops I can do for teachers. And they kind of pick, and then if they invite me to come anywhere in the country, you can go. So, for example, like, with schools, you know, my background as a writer, so I would do, like, writing workshops, or I think the most popular workshop was Teen Life in America. So I had lots of, you know, sometimes humorous, you know, questions about what it's like to be a teenager in America. And also, so for teachers, I would do workshops like, you know, do an environmental project with students, or how to get students to write. And again, you know, throughout the year, you're kind of tweaking your presentations, because sometimes the things you think you're going to teach just don't work. Like I had a workshop on Native American repatriation, which just totally fell flat. So I was like, I just scrapped that. I think this program is, one, you know, willingness to really kind of get out into the country, but also I think it takes a lot of flexibility. So, for example, typically I would have sometimes just 45 minutes with the class. Other times I would work with a group of students for 2 days. I did that once. You know, once I showed up at a school and they said, hey, can you go talk to a kindergarten class about animals? So I was like, okay, sure, you know. So it's a lot of kind of, you know, off the cuff, just interacting with people and answering questions about America, trying to provide resources for teachers in Norway that give them that kind of on-the-ground feel or new teaching techniques. One of the things that Peter was going to mention was that what's different with this application is you submit, I think it's an 8 to 10 minute video of yourself teaching. So what I did is I had a friend that was teaching at a local high school, working with actually international students. And, you know, my wife came, she filmed me, and I was just trying to show that I wasn't just going to go and kind of stand in front of a class and lecture, that I was really looking for ways to engage students in hands-on ways, to make topics of America interesting, and to show some kind of new techniques. So that was really key. The other kind of thing that I would mention, I think this is true for all the awards, is to really get that on-the-ground experience as much as you can. So the Fulbright directory, you can look up, you know, where people went, what institutions they work with. You know, for me, I contacted other rovers before I went, and I wanted to get that kind of on-the-ground feel of, like, okay, so what is this experience like? You know, what are the challenges of teaching Norwegian students? And I'm sure, you know, Dr. Broussard has ideas, too. They're wonderful students, but there's also this idea of Janteloven that, you know, they're not the most talkative classes. So it's like, I wanted to know that beforehand as I'm creating workshops, like, how do I get students who may be a little hesitant to speak to talk? And also, since I mentioned the photo, I'll just close with mentioning, you know, one of the personal reasons I went to Norway was my dad's side of the family came from Norway. So this little photo you see on the screen, that's actually the old family farm that I tracked down, which was actually built in 1194. It's actually a museum. And so, you know, I got to meet Norwegian relatives that I didn't even know I had. So I think just not only for me, I was mentioning, you know, traveling with a family, or from Arizona, my son, who was in kindergarten and never seen snow. So, like, he had an incredible experience. Also for my wife, she got to experience Norwegian culture. So I think for our whole family, it was such an impactful experience. And again, I would say this is such an amazing experience. Even when I meet other Fulbright people, they're like, you can do what with this program? And I know they're really looking for applicants. So if you're interested in, you know, teaching and really working with diverse students and getting a chance to see a whole country, and also getting a chance to, like, see schools across the whole country, because you even get to go to, you know, remote schools up in the Arctic Circle, you know, where it's dark for 3 months in the winter. So you really get a feel for educational system, and you get to experience the culture in a kind of hands-on way. So I really encourage you to apply. It's a fantastic program. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Torin. That's such a great insight into a very unique kind of award in the Scholar Catalog. So I'm going to open the floor to Q&A after we go through just a few more slides that discuss how to craft a competitive application and give you some other parameters to consider when you're applying for the Fulbright program. So you want to pay attention to things like language requirements. For Northern Europe in general, English is sufficient, but some awards may recommend knowledge of a local language, as we saw, depending on the nature of the project. So again, if you're doing a research project that requires a local language, you want to make sure that there's a way for you to deal with that if you don't have a local language. Then there are some special features that will vary by award and by country. So for example, Norway has a really great feature. All U.S. grantees to Norway have opportunities to gather as a group. There's an orientation held in Oslo in August. And then the second is a seminar in February, which happens at a ski resort near Lillehammer. So that's a wonderful sort of added benefit to award to Norway. Then in Finland, Fulbright Finland in Helsinki arranges a 3.5-day orientation for grantees at the end of August, where grantees arriving for the fall semester are expected to attend it. And then there's an orientation that happens in January for folks that are arriving at, you know, at a different point of the academic year. So you want to pay attention to the award features. There's generally written into the award, there is information around if there's additional funding for things like a book allowance, or you know, if there's additional funding for dependents. So that's really something that, you know, you can start to get an idea of some additional parameters of awards by paying attention to things like this. There are a lot of reasons not to do something, and I really want to encourage you to think about how the Fulbright can work for you. I want to bring up some notions around things that you may not have considered before that might make the difference between, you know, considering applying in the future or considering applying now, or how you can fit into the Fulbright program. So the Flex option is available for many awards throughout our catalog. For Northern Europe, there are several awards in Finland that offer Flex grants. Generally, there are not Flex grants available, but what a Flex grant is, instead of being a way for a full academic year or for a full semester, you can segment your grants into chunks. So maybe if it's a four-month grant, you can maybe do two-month segments. This is great for folks that aren't up for sabbatical or may not be able to fit a longer-term opportunity into their schedule. So again, throughout Northern Europe, generally Flex grants are not available, but many of the awards in Finland have Flex grants available. And as I showed you in the catalog of awards, you can actually search for awards under award length if they offer Flex grants. Again, we offer awards, though, aggregately throughout the catalog for folks in all levels and all sort of points in their career, everything from postdoc to early career to distinguished chair and everything in between. For the most part, Fulbright awards are to go to one particular country, but there are opportunities in our catalog that feature multiple countries. The Global Scholar Award features the ability to go to two or three countries. They must be in two different world regions. Specifically in Europe at large, there are opportunities there are a handful of opportunities that allow you to go to more than one country. There's an award that allows you to go between Greece and Spain. There's an award that allows you to go from Spain to Morocco, sort of across the ocean there. But again, for the most part, awards tend to be one-to-one, so one person going to one country. Home university affiliation is not always required. We accept applicants who are independent scholars emeritus, artists, professionals, practitioners outside of academia. You know, depending on the award parameters, there's likely to be an award that fits a variety of different profiles. You just want to pay attention to the parameters that are written into the award description. I will not belabor this slide too much, but what I want you to take away from this is that you're not alone in this process. We really have a lot of resources on our website, and we break down the application, we give instructions, we give detailed information about what a good project statement could look like. And we even give samples of project statements. We give information about requesting letters of invitation. We give information about, who to ask for letters of recommendation for, et cetera. So we break down every aspect of the application on our website. And for everyone who has registered for this webinar, I will follow up with you with the digital materials laid out for you in a way that's sort of articulated so that you can find things pretty easily. Our website is really, really vast, and we have a good way of sort of summarizing it, and I'll follow up with everyone that signed up for this webinar. Webinar is another resource. We have webinars that we do live, but also archive. We have a whole host of webinars organized by countries or regions or disciplines and other topics. The Fulbright Scholar blog is a good way to get insight into what grantees have done on the Fulbright program. So really understanding, it's great to have Dr. Broussard and Torrin Anderson with us to give their insight. But we have lots of stories about the kinds of things that folks have done on their Fulbright grants written into our blog as well. My Fulbright is another resource where you can sign up to receive targeted messaging about countries of interest or disciplines of interest or even particular awards of interest. So I'll give information at the end of the webinar how to join my Fulbright, but that's a way to be in touch with us and receive messaging from us about particular interests tailored to your focus. For the application, it's pretty straightforward. It's nothing you haven't seen, but I want to sort of unpack this a little bit and then take Q&A. So there's an application form. There's a project statement. I'll talk about the project statement in just a second. We want a CV or resume, generally 6 pages. For the Distinguished Chair Award, it will take up to 8 pages. We want 3 letters of reference. Generally, these are the 3 best people that can advocate for you. If you are applying for a teaching award, though, one of the letters of reference should come from someone that can evaluate you as an instructor. Then, depending on the award, there will be different sort of baseline requirements. If you're applying for teaching awards, we want course outlines or syllabi up to 10 pages, 2 to 3 syllabi. They can be classes you have taught, classes you hope to teach. For awards featuring research, we like to have a bibliography. So this is, really think of this as an annotated lit review. Essentially, we want to understand that you understand the relevant research for your topic. Letters of invitation are required or suggested for many of our awards. And then if you're applying in the arts, architecture, writing, journalism, any field where there might be a work sample expected, there's a way to upload that into the application as well. And then as Torrin Anderson mentioned, because the Roving Scholar program is very, very unique, there are other requirements particular to that award, and they'll be written into the award description. But for the Roving Scholars, you have to submit a video of you teaching. So that's another component that's particular to that award. We write into the award descriptions anything like that that is particular to specific awards. The project statement, it's your way to articulate how you fit into the Fulbright program, how your project is, both cutting edge, interesting, relevant, resonant, but also something that speak to the foundation of the Fulbright program, which is that person-to-person diplomacy, that ambassadorial aspect. So why is it a good project for you, for your host institution, for your home institution, for the United States, for the country that's hosting you? What is it that you're planning on doing? Give us a sense of your plan of action. And then give us a sense of what your vision is for outcomes, how you can impact, how you can make impact. So Dr. Broussard talked about having collaborative projects and working with students from the institution that hosted him or from his grant in Finland coming to do work in New Jersey, for example, or things of that nature. What is your vision for the impact of the work that you're doing? These are really some key ideas in terms of how to put together a strong project statement, and again, I'll send you resources about what makes a strong project statement and give you some samples of project statements as well. In terms of letters of invitation, they're non-binding expressions of interest. Generally, they should come from the person who's hosting you, and they should be on host institution letterhead. Ideally, the letter of invitation will be very enthusiastic. It should resonate with your proposal. So if you're proposing, a six-month teaching grant, the letter of invitation should reflect that. And as much as is possible, be enthusiastic about the project that you're doing. We also recognize, though, some systems of higher education, some standards of practice in different universities, they may prohibit how enthusiastic someone can appear in a letter of invitation. But this is a component of many of our awards. There's guidelines and guidance and insight around letters of invitation that I'll send to everyone that registered for this webinar. In a nutshell, though, understanding what makes a competitive application, there are lots and lots of great teaching and research projects, but to be a successful Fulbright project, you really have to understand what is the context, what is the impact, how is this a good thing for all stakeholders involved, for you professionally and academically, for your host institution, for your home institution, for your host country, and certainly for the United States. Why is this a great thing? We want to get a sense of what your vision is for how you fit into that. So it's obviously we want to support your incredible project in your whatever your discipline may be, whatever your project may be, but it has to be contextualized in this sense of, as a Fulbrighter, you're an ambassador. Very quickly, I want to go over our timeline. So our deadline is August 1st. And when you submit your application, your application then goes into what we refer to as peer review. So you're read by committees based on the discipline relevant to your project, and then another committee that is focused on the country or the region that you're applying to. What this tells you is that you need to write a project that is specific enough in your discipline that someone in your field can understand that you have a good grasp of the project, but that's general enough that someone outside of your discipline won't get lost in the weeds of the jargon of the project. So you really have to find that sweet spot between, writing for your discipline, but also writing for a generalist. That's what the peer review process entails. We let you know whether or not you made it through peer review, and then after peer review, you go to the countries. The countries may have interviews involved. In the case of like the Norway Roving Scholars, they may require you to submit a video at a certain point in the application process. But once they go to the countries and the countries make decisions, then the final decision is made by the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. Generally, between February and May, we notify grantees of final approvals. Obviously, with over 125 different countries, there isn't one deadline for all decisions, so they sort of roll out country by country anywhere between February and May. And then grant packets get sent to grantees between May and June, and some folks start as early as June of the year after the application deadline. So there are many ways to stay in touch with us. My Fulbright, that's our network where you can sign up and indicate interest in particular countries or particular disciplines. That's CIEF2.org. Our email, europeeurasia@iie.org, that is our Europe team, so feel free to contact us if you have questions that we don't get to during the webinar. Our website is quite comprehensive, but again, I'll send you a breakdown of the resources that we have digitally. And then we also have a referral project where you can refer your colleagues if you think there might be colleagues of yours that should consider a Fulbright program, a Fulbright award, rather. We're also very present across all social media platforms, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, lots and lots of ways to stay in touch with us. So thanks, everyone. This is sort of the end of the formal presentation, and what I want to do is open the floor to questions and answers. So I'm going to go through the questions that have already been asked. Please feel free to continue chatting in questions. We have a good question about competitiveness. Can I get a ballpark idea of how competitive the Swedish Fulbright Awards are relative to other countries? Is there an advantage to applying teaching versus research? What can you tell me about competitiveness? This is a very tricky question because so you open an award and you see there are 5 grants. If we get 8 applications that don't fit the parameters of the grant, we're not going to give any grants to that award that year. So competitiveness is really relative. You really, the best way to be competitive is to fit the parameters of the grant as much as possible. And also sort of get, it's a good idea to have your proposal, share it with colleagues from your discipline and also outside of your discipline so you can get feedback from someone that's connected to the work that you do and someone that maybe not be so connected to the work that you can do so they can give you an idea of how your proposal might be received. We really don't publish statistics for the Fulbright Scholar Program. Because the awards are so very, very different, I don't know that statistics would even really be helpful. So it's really more about paying attention to the parameters of the grant and really working on fitting into what the grant is looking for as much as possible and you know, letting that guide you in your efforts to applying. So let's scroll to see some additional questions. I had a dissertation year-long Fulbright in Sweden in 1982. How will this impact my application? So that's great. We love Fulbright alumni to reapply for grants. There's a 2-year waiting period. Obviously, 1982-83 is well beyond the 2 years, of course. What Fulbright alumni that are reapplying for grants, what they really want to focus on, at least in part in their proposal, is how the Fulbright impacted them professionally, academically, personally. And, you know, what about your Fulbright experience inspires you to look for another Fulbright grant? So that's the sort of the only extra added piece that a Fulbright alumnus should do some due diligence on in the application. So you really want to talk about how Fulbright has impacted you, what were the outcomes of your previous Fulbright grant, and you know, talk a little bit about, you know, why you're inspired to apply for another Fulbright grant. Obviously, you have a 5-page proposal in which you have to write a project that fits the parameters of the grant, can speak to an audience that's specific to your discipline, an audience that is generalist in the country or region, and also speaks to the diplomacy aspect. You know, this is 5 pages. So you really can't spend a ton of time on what you did in your previous Fulbright, but giving us some insight, giving us some context, that's going to help a former Fulbright alumnus reapply and be successful. I have a question about a married couple. If a married couple applies for separate Fulbright awards, does Fulbright give consideration to the country awarding them together? Unfortunately, we don't. We do not, we make each award has a number of grants, and each grant is given to one particular person. So if you're a married couple and you're both applying, that's great. We have no prohibitions against that at all. If you both happen to get the Fulbright Award for that particular country, that's wonderful. If one of you gets it and the other doesn't, it may, it's usually possible to bring dependents. So So that could be a way around that if both partners do not receive the Fulbright grant. There are a few countries that prohibit dependents, but they're only a few. So really most countries, at the very least, accommodate dependents. Others will have additional sources of funding for dependents. So that'll also be written into the award description. Question about the advantages and disadvantages of choosing fall versus spring semesters. Generally not, unless it's written into the award description. There are awards in Northern Europe that are 5 to 10 months, for example, but they prefer a 10-month grant, for example. And that'll be written in. If there's a preference for a particular semester or a particular grant length, that'll be written into the award description. Who decides, or how is the 50% teaching, 50% research calculated? If you're applying for a teaching combination, teaching research grant, generally, unless it's specified in the award description, as long as your host institution is okay with your plan of action, then that's fine. If there's a particular ratio that's specified rather in the award description, you want to discuss this with the potential host and write a plan that reflects that. No one's going to hold a stopwatch up to you, so this is, you know, obviously an estimate, but it's really about fitting into those parameters. Some awards will want, you know, 60-40 teaching research or something along those lines. So you just want to pay attention to the parameters expressed in the award description and make sure that your profile and your proposal are congruent with that. I have a question about reapplying. I was listed as an alternate this year and wanted to see what are your thoughts about submitting the same proposal or a new proposal. So not everyone who applies gets the Fulbright on the first try. That's, you know, there's no shame in that. Certainly to be an alternate, that's a great thing. You know, that means that, you know, you're an alternate. So if for some reason a principal drops out or can't participate, you could be sort of granted the grant. But in general, for reapplicants, it depends on if you are interested in the same country, if you're interested in the same award. Some of the awards disappear. So generally, all disciplines awards kind of stay put, but some of the very particular awards may change focus. Some years they may want particular disciplines, or some years there's a host at one university, then the next year they're not. So you just want to pay attention to any of those parameters. You can certainly tweak what you have submitted previously in a reapplication. We will need new letters of recommendation, though, and we will, you know, if your invitation letter, it has dates on it, you definitely want to refresh that with the host institution. But, you know, you can use the same proposal that you wrote as a starting point for a new application. I am proposing a project to bridge across two departments and an interdisciplinary program at the University of Amsterdam. Who should write my letter? Should my three collaborators sign the letter? If they're all at the same institution and they're able to bureaucratically do that, that's fine. Otherwise, I would go with the primary host. I have a collaborator at the University of Gothenburg. Her department has not hosted in the past. How can she explain to her chair the parameters of the letter of invitation? That's a great question. What you want to do is have a conversation with her and sort of hash out the details of the award, and then express to her what the award covers, what the breakdown of, if it's a teaching research award, for example, or if it's a research award, or if there's a preferred discipline. The letters of invitation are non-binding, so that's something that, you know, your potential host can talk to her department about. You know, it's an expression of interest, but it's not a contract at that point. So that may sort of take some of the high-stakes nature of the letter away, but really it's about having a discussion, making sure that, you know, your potential host understands what you're hoping to do, and if she needs to bring that to her department, just being clear about what you're focusing on and what you're hoping to do with a Fulbright grant. If we have no contact with personnel or departments at universities, how do we go about getting a letter of invitation? You may just have answered my question. I'll check the website. Well, no, I mean, obviously we have lots of resources on our website, but I do want to address that because that's a great question. One of the ways to start finding potential host institutions is look at what faculty are doing. Look at what they're studying, what they're researching, what they're teaching, and if there's a resonance around around that, then that could be a good place to start. There's some general resources on our website around letters of invitation, and I'll send that to everyone that registered for this webinar. But again, you know, I think it's all about finding a good fit and really focusing. If you're completely stuck, definitely look at what the faculty of particular institutions are doing. There's also on our website, we have the Fulbright Scholar Directory. You can search the directory. It's recent Fulbright awardee, so this won't be, you know, from the history of the whole history of the program, but I think it's up from 2010 to now. You can search by the discipline. You can search by the home institution in the U.S. You may find colleagues, for example, at your institution that went to that country, or colleagues in your discipline that went to a particular country. These may be resources for you as well that can sort of help you find people on the ground in the country to potentially host you. Okay, I'm going to scroll. We have a lot of great questions. I have a question approaching a field like sexuality and humanities. Are there particular topics less likely to get in if I'm focusing on projects that involve sex worker studies, similar projects for sexuality and humanities? I don't think there, you know, unless it's written into the award description, I really wouldn't, you know, finding the linkage between what you're hoping to do and the award description is key. So if there's something about sexuality and humanities, and there are certainly awards that feature social work, social studies, things of that nature, anthropology, psychology, you know, that you could link a project to in sexuality and the humanities, absolutely. You know, I don't think there's an issue with that. But if you're concerned around nuances like this, is my topic appropriate, reach out to us, email us. We're happy to have a call with you and sort of think through any concerns that you may have. You know, we're not really, really able to give a ton of feedback just because there's a huge volume of applicants, but we can definitely guide you and help, you know, talk through things. So, you know, reach out to us if there are super nuanced questions like that. You know, is my topic appropriate? Is it less likely to get in? Things of that nature. If you have questions along those lines, reach out to us. We're happy to talk to you. I have a question about the Roving Scholar Program, and I'm going to invite Torin Anderson to share some insight on this. For the Roving Scholar Award in Norway, what aspect of American culture and American studies should the applicant be able to speak to? Is it more general sharing American studies and culture? Is it more proving American styles of pedagogy? That's sort of the framework. So what kinds of aspects of American culture and studies should a roving scholar address in the application? And Torin, if you can, if you're still on the line and you're able to address that question, I invite you to share your insight. And Torin, I think you're self-muted. I can hear you now. Great.
Okay, great. Thanks. Sorry about that. Thanks for the question. Really good question. One thing I would check is there is actually an annual report from the Roving Scholar Program for recent years, and you can go in and see all the different things that people have presented, both for students and teachers. And also, Fulbright Norway is incredibly helpful, along with you know, the Center for Foreign Languages that we work with, and they'll give you information on what's been done in the past, and they can kind of help you get a sense. But what I understand, you know, it can really be very general. I mean, there's two other rovers the year that I did it, and they were working on very different things. So it can be, you know, like pop culture, political issues, I mean, anything related to American studies. I mean, here's where it's helpful to contact Norway, is that there's some things like civil rights that classes typically cover that, you know, a workshop in that area would be really helpful. But again, I would touch base with them and see, you know, if the things you're thinking is a good fit. In terms of teachers, you know, what I found is that teachers were looking for really kind of hands-on, like, what can I do tomorrow? But again, I spoke with other rovers who did things like how to use podcasts with students. So, I mean, it can be really creative. And I think since there's been a history of different rovers, you know, coming up with something unique or something you're really passionate about could fit really well. So I hope that answered your question.
No, thanks, Tarn. I think that's spot on, and that's a really great insight. You know, there's a lot of leeway and leverage, and it's sort of as things relate to your project, you want to, you know, speak to that. That's part of the design of the project. So I think you know, Tarn's experience is a great insight to understanding the Roving Scholar Program. That's really a very unique award, though, I must say, in the catalog of awards of 470 different awards. That one really stands out. The mid-career professional awards in Finland really stand out as awards that are different than the, you know, quote-unquote typical Fulbright Scholar Awards. So we have we're just above the hour, but I want to answer just a few more questions. If I didn't get to your question, I have a log of all the questions that have been asked, so I'm very happy to follow up with folks after the fact if I didn't get to your question. But I want to answer just a few more questions quickly. Who signs the letter of invitation? The scholar, administrator, generally should be the person that's hosting you, but we understand that some cases you're not able, the university may not be, you know, whoever your potential host may not be able to issue a letter of invitation, and they may need to have the department or the dean or some higher level administrator sign that. Generally, it should be from the host, the potential host faculty member in the country. For a research award, is it a good idea to have one or three letters of reference come from the host institution? That's tricky. That's a nuance. I would get the three best advocates for you. So your host faculty member should not write a letter of reference. That should not be the case. If someone else from the university in overseas wants to write a letter of reference, that's okay. I wouldn't really recommend having three from the same institution. You know, it's helpful if a variety of sources are referring you. That could give you a competitive edge. But, we're sort of open-ended about that because it should be the three best people that can advocate for you. But absolutely, the person that is hosting you, the faculty member that's going to have you in their office overseas, that should not be the person writing one of your three letters of recommendation. Well, at this point, we are about 10 minutes past the hour, and I'm going to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank Dr. John Broussard and Tarn Anderson, Fulbright alumni, for sharing their insight about their Fulbright grant. I want to thank everyone for joining the webinar. I have a log of all the questions that have been asked, so I'm going to get back to everyone that I didn't get to their question. But if for some reason you don't hear from me or something else occurs to you, something you didn't get a chance to ask, please do email us at europeeurasia@iie.org, and we're happy to take your questions. Thanks, everyone, so much, and we really hope to get applications from you. I hope you've had a great time getting a survey of Northern Europe.